Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Listeners, before we get to today's conversation with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand about rubles and crypto and some other things that aren't currency, we wanted to tell you about a new podcast from one of our colleagues, Nancy Solomon, a veteran reporter on the New Jersey politics beat for over 20 years. And in 2014, that beat included the unsolved deaths of a married couple involved in New Jersey politics and a lackluster investigation by the police. Since then, new evidence has come out, and Nancy has stayed close on that beat. She's got a sort of professional obsession with the story, which she uses in the podcast to ask bigger questions about the state of politics in New Jersey. So, Senator Gillibrand in a couple of minutes. But first, here's my very short conversation with WNYC's Nancy Solomon about her new podcast, Dead End, a New Jersey political murder mystery. Nancy, what have you got for us?
Well, Brian, for the past 2 years, I've been working on a story about John and Joyce Sheridan. They were a prominent couple in suburban New Jersey, and they died in their home in 2014. From the day of their deaths, questions started, and I've been trying to follow those leads. This is a story about one family's attempt to get their reputation back, and it's also a story about corruption at the highest levels of government in New Jersey.
Corruption in New Jersey? I'm shocked, shocked. Sounds intriguing. Who did you talk to?
Family members, lawyers, detectives. I talked to people on the record, off the record. Here's a detective who was one of the first people on the scene.
If I make a mistake, I'll own the mistake. And I'll own the mistake that I didn't document that blood staining on the wall. That was something that I should have done, even though I was told not to. If I had to do over, I would definitely do it.
Whoa, it sounds like there's a lot to this, Nancy. I'm downloading. What's the podcast called?
Dead End, a New Jersey political murder mystery.
Wherever you get your podcasts, folks. I'm excited to hear more about this, Nancy, when you come on the show next week. I know we're going to do a live segment, too. And until then, I'll be listening.
Thanks, Brian. Looking forward to it.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Wednesday, April 27th. Now our monthly Call Your Senator segment, My Questions and Yours, for our visit with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who, among other things, just spent 9 days overseas in Poland and elsewhere during this war in Ukraine era. Remember, Gillibrand is on the Armed Services Committee as one of her major roles. Poland is in the news today in a new way in this war. We'll ask her about this. Russia is cutting off gas sales to Poland because Poland won't buy it in rubles. Economic blackmail, you might call it, against a NATO member. And just as the U.S. is getting more directly involved by sending more weaponry to Ukraine. Hi, Senator. Always good to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
I want to ask about several of the stops on your trip, but Poland is really caught in the middle as the country next door, taking all those refugees and having warplanes that Ukraine wants, and now the cutoff of gas sales from Russia. What did you learn on your trip to Poland?
So it was really important for us to meet with the 82nd Airborne, who is forward deployed right now to Poland, to do logistics and support, to provide resolve and all the munitions and other weaponry that the Ukrainians need. The men and women who are serving there are extremely committed to helping the Ukrainians win this war. They know that the Ukrainians will fight to the very end. They aspire to win, and we're trying to give them the tools they need to do so. It was extremely inspiring because these men and women have been there now for a couple months. They intend to stay until through the year, and they will be there as long as the Ukrainians need them. We also met with some of our allies and talked about what the joint operations look like, and it was an important stop for our delegation. We also were able to meet with Ukrainian civil society, some advocates through not-for-profits and governing authorities within Ukraine. Women in particular met with us, and they told us the things that they really want from America, additional weapons, additional munitions, and just words of support that they want us to, you know, understand that their goal is to win. So they want us to focus on what we will do to help them to win. And I thought that was really important, that they need the psychic help as well of just constantly standing up to Russia and pushing back against Russia's ambition and violence.
On helping Ukraine win, which is their new sort of ramped up goal with some of the success they have had in holding off Russian troops, despite the horrible massacres of civilians and others that the Russians are succeeding in undertaking. As a member of the Armed Services Committee, what do you think? It sounds like you're supportive from that first answer, but about increasing commitments by the U.S. and some of our Western allies to send more weapons to Ukraine, as President Zelensky has been asking for, to try to actually win the war. Russia threatens that it could actually become World War III if we have American heavy weapons attacking Russians or attacking Russian soil. So what is the U.S. changing? And do you, as someone who staunchly stood by your convictions on getting out of the war in Afghanistan, have any reservations about getting more involved in this?
So we intend to continue to support the Ukrainian people with military support and with other aid and humanitarian relief. And interestingly, also during this trip, we went to Berlin and met with our NATO allies and particularly members of the Bundestag. And we talked a lot about the ways that NATO particularly can continue to support Ukraine. And this wake-up call that we as a nation and we as a world community have with this extreme decision by Russia to invade a neighboring sovereign country. That in and of itself changed people's worldviews. Russia was not investing in military equipment and military capabilities. Germany is now investing in military equipment and capabilities, and Germany previously was very much tied to Russia for its fuel, for a lot of economic investment, and they are having to reorder how they see the future. And that reordering is really important because the ambition of Russia is not dissimilar from the ambition of China. And we are very concerned that as Russia continues to push and destroy and harm civilians and bomb schools and bomb hospitals, that if America and NATO don't stand strong against Russia, it will send a message to China that they can invade Taiwan anytime they want and no one will do anything. And so it is a fine line. We do not want to start World War III. We do not want to encourage Russia to start World War III. We do not want to have Putin become more unhinged and more unstable. And so pushing back on what we can do for the Ukrainians by giving them material support for them to use is the best we can do without, I think, overstepping the line of being escalatory in a way that Putin decides then to start World War III.
Yeah. On that news about Poland and Russia today, do you understand why Russia cares if Poland buys gas in rubles or dollars or some other currency? Isn't money all money and they can exchange the dollars for rubles anyway? Like if we travel overseas, we have to change our money to the local currency?
part of the problem for Russia is our sanctions. We have locked down access to the world markets, access to world banking, access to dollars. And so they want rubles to strengthen their currency and to be able to buy things that they need through rubles. I think it's also probably an issue of nationalism, and they're just trying to create a positive narrative that Russia's economy isn't falling through the floor, which it is. And so part of our goal is to increase sanctions to make sure they affect all of the oligarchs, all of the generals, all of the inner circle around Putin, all of the elected leaders who supported the war. And we have to start taking their apartments in New York City. I mean, there's things that we should be doing to create pain and enormous discomfort and economic anxiety for the Russian elite, because we need them to push back on Putin. We need them to feel uncomfortable with what's happening and hopefully push him aside in some meaningful way.
The city government of New York or the United States government can just take away people's apartments in New York City that they bought legitimately?
If they are Russian oligarchs and they are currently being sanctioned, you can take their money, you can take their yachts, you can take their homes, you can take any aspect of their wealth. It can be sanctioned and it can be taken. And that is what happens during a war, an illegal war that's happening in Ukraine, is that if you have assets abroad, they are no longer safe. And we do that all the time for illegal activity. In normal parlance, normal criminal law, when you're trying to take out a international drug trafficking operation, you're going to take all of the benefits and wealth that was created through that illegal trafficking. Yes. And so we will lock down all the wealth that the oligarchs have created and have as a way to stop this illegal war.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand with us. We'll get to your calls for her in a minute. You also went to India, a country of a billion people that the U.S. wants to get involved in the sanctions against Russia, but they have their needs and a lot of poverty, and they've been relatively neutral. Was that your mission in India, to try to convince them into the sanctions regime?
Yes. It's really important for the United States to project on a worldwide basis our values, our goals, and our relationships. The one thing that China doesn't have and the one thing that Russia doesn't have are the type of alliances and friendships that the United States has. And so we need to strengthen those alliances and build those friendships. And so part of our purpose in going to India and Nepal is to engage those leaders, because both of them have deep concerns about China's ambitions. Unfortunately, India still acquires its military equipment from Russia, but they are now waking up to the fact that the Russian equipment is not effective. It's done terribly in Ukraine. It's broken down. It's not worked. And second, they're not going to have access to any parts and supplies that they need if they want to maintain those weapons that they have from Russia. So we wanted to create an overture and an invitation that we would love to work with you to maybe realign your goals with the United States, buy aircraft from us, buy munitions and weapons from us, weapon systems, have a greater tie with the U.S. And there's opportunities to do that. So when we came back, we've reported that to the administration, the kind of things that both India and Nepal were open to.
Rehan in Queens has an India-related call for you. Rehan, you're on WNYC with Senator Gillibrand. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. I want to know why this administration has not been very forceful in condemning India's human rights abuses. I think that there should be more condemnation from this government and from the senator with regards to what's going on in India, especially under Prime Minister Narendra Modi, where Muslims are being persecuted. And it's almost equivalent to war crimes or crimes against humanity.
Senator.
Part of our goal in visiting is to lift up our values and to invite other countries to follow our leadership on human rights and on recognizing and supporting religious minorities. Tony Blinken is monitoring the rise in human rights abuses in India. It's something that he has engaged with the Prime Minister directly. In our meetings with the defense minister and the minister of external affairs, which is similar to their secretary of state, as well as their national security advisor, we really focused our conversation on their ambiguity with regard to what's happening in Ukraine, because we need the world community to reject Russia's violence and attacks on innocent civilians. And so we did, by our presence and our conversation, really lift up these human rights violations in a way that we could push India to change direction.
Here's a question relevant, I think, to your role on the Armed Forces Committee. Salome in Philadelphia. You're on WNYC with Senator Gillibrand. Hello, Salome.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Senator. I am a post-9/11 veteran with PTSD and MST. I qualified for the caregiver program in 2016 and have benefited from it ever since. My partner is my caregiver, and my condition has improved since my enrollment. The program is now open to all veterans, and rather than raise the budget, they changed the enrollment guidelines, which have eliminated 80 to 90% of the post-9/11 veterans, including myself. We will lose the stipend and access to medical care for my spouse, and I'm worried that my condition will deteriorate. We were told that the discharges had been paused, but that we should still prepare to be deemed ineligible. Are you aware of the change in the caregiver program and the amount of younger veterans who have been kicked out of this beneficial program?
Thank you for briefing me on this. I'd heard something about it briefly in a hearing in the last week, I think. I think it might have even been yesterday. So I will investigate it, and I will do what I can to restore this caregiver program. I am the chairwoman of the personnel subcommittee, and today we are actually having a posture hearing for the personnel subcommittee. And so I will be asking questions on this, and I'll try to get maybe more information from you after this call so that I can lift up your example if you're willing to make sure that Brian has your number so we can be in touch.
Salome, hang on. We'll take your contact information off the air, and thank you for that offer to get in touch with her, Senator. Relevant also to your role on the Armed Services Committee, but changing topics, we've spoken here many times about your efforts to have military officers held more accountable for sexual harassment and sexual assault. And I see in the New York Times today a case I admit I had not been previously familiar with, that an Air Force general has been court-martialed and now sentenced. They say the first court-martial ever for a general in that branch of the military, the Air Force, for forcibly kissing a woman. But the article notes he will only be docked 5 months' pay and get a reprimand, but not dismissed. Are you familiar with this case?
I have read about it. I was not familiar with it before the New York Times wrote it up. But the good news is that he is the first general to actually be prosecuted in 75 years. So we can say that that is progress, to be prosecuted for sexual misconduct and to be sentenced and reprimanded and have a serious penalty. The general did avoid more severe penalties that could have been imposed, including dismissal, as well as a reduction in rank, or he could have gotten up to 7 years in prison. But the lawyer for the woman who came forward did believe that this was progress, and he believed that this was a hopeful sign for sure that things are changing. We still have a very long way to go, Brian, and I tried to put much more far-reaching reforms in last year's defense bill. We accomplished getting it all in the Senate side, but it was taken out behind closed doors in conference. And so now there's just modest improvements in last year's bill that we hope to build on or get a direct up and down vote for the full Senate in by the end of this year. So we have a lot of work to do, but at least having a small measure of oversight and accountability in this one case means that survivors can be more hopeful that they will have a chance for justice.
And the woman he was found guilty of sexually assaulting is reportedly his own sister-in-law. So that's a gross part of the story. I'm sure he's got a very unhappy sibling or spouse somewhere in that story. But how do you build on something like this? How do you build on the measures that you have passed in the Senate with a next step, especially with the politics of the Senate as it is?
So in the last national defense bill, the change was that if you are sexually assaulted or sexually harassed, that the decision-making about whether to prosecute the case would be given to a trained military prosecutor. The limitation there is that the prosecutor is not entirely independent. Unfortunately, the commanders retain a lot of the rights and privileges of the convening authority, which is a military term of art. That means the person gets to pick the judge, the jury, the prosecutor, and defense counsel, gets to make evidentiary decisions, gets to decide whether the person can be dismissed. And if all that still rests with the commander, you will not have the appearance sufficiently, in my view, that the military justice system is independent, truly independent of the chain of command. So we'd like to take the convening authority away from commanders and give it to these trained independent prosecutors. We would also like to make sure all serious crimes are covered, because if you do a bright line at the equivalent of felonies, you will assure that justice is possible for every plaintiff and every defendant, where we have seen bias against women and men who are alleging sexual harassment and assault, but also bias in sentencing against Black and Brown service members. So we want to rectify all the injustices in the system, and you can do that with a bright line.
And Senator Gillibrand, I know you got to go, so thank you for today, the end of our monthly Call Your Senator segment for April, and we'll talk to you again in May. Thank you so much.
Sounds great, Brian. Thank you, everybody, and thanks to all the callers who called in.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.